Welcome to another episode of Across the Pond, where we discuss the big stories and top investment ideas from the Eurozone and Switzerland. When investors think about innovation, the conversation usually starts in the US and often ends there. But that may mean they're missing an important part of the story. Because while Europe is often associated with weaker growth, energy shocks, and geopolitical pressure, some of its leading companies are telling a very different story, one of adaptation, resilience, and innovation. In fact, after a difficult stretch, parts of the European market are seeing a meaningful revival, not just in areas like industrials, but also in areas like IT, automation, robotics, semiconductor equipment, and even luxury and lifestyle. In fact, we're seeing European corporate profit growth rebound at its fastest pace in 3 years. I'm Christopher Swan.
And I'm Belinda Peters. So the question is not just whether the European economy is doing well, it's whether investors are underestimating the strength of European companies. To unpack all of this, we're joined today by Rolf Ganter, head of European equities. In this episode, we'll discuss why some of the most interesting innovation stories in global markets may now be coming from Europe's industrial, technological, and consumer leaders, and where investors may be overlooking the opportunity. Rolf, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Belinda. Thanks, Chris. Great to be back again.
Yeah. So let's just kicking it off. You could say sort of Europe can't seem to catch a break, right? Because we obviously the region was much more impacted than, say, the United States by the sort of high energy prices following Russia's invasion of Ukraine due to its reliance on imported energy. And now we're right back in the same situation with the conflict in Iran. So how has the region and particularly the companies been coping?
Look, I think you just gave a nice hint here, Chris, right? I think we have been under trouble over the last few years. And so that really helped companies really, and by the way, also consumers to get ready, to get fit for that. And just give you a little bit of hint for our listeners. I mean, here in Europe, we talk about around $10 per a gallon of gas. So that means like we have much, much higher energy prices here in Europe, not only for gas, but also in some instances, electricity and other things. And so clearly, people are really focusing on energy efficiency and taking, or especially companies, regularly taking costs out on a continuous basis. And so that really helped this time, if I may say so, to really, let's say, not getting a red head and literally exploding, but really thinking like, okay, look, we've done our job. We are lean and mean. We can cope with that. Let's ensure we're going to have access to what we need. But hey, it's not as, you know, the impact is not as big anymore than the last time. And so that really helped. And so, they were prepared much better than the last time.
And how has the latest earnings season looked? European companies seem to be holding up better than expected, even though the macro backdrop is still quite weak. So I'm curious to know what stood out the most to you.
Look, it comes back to this lean and mean again. We are not really a growth area here in many aspects, but what companies did here across the board, they really took big time costs out, i.e. ongoing restructuring, quite often also at the expense of employees, but also looking, really lifting every stone and looking what can we do, what can we change. And so you saw that in the earnings season. Yes, revenue growth was mediocre at best, but on the earnings side, you saw the stabilization. It also comes back a little bit before, right, with the energy price increases, as an example, right? So when you knew that these things were highly energy incentive, intensive, you really streamlined that before, and that over the last few years, and that helped now you really do, you see the fruits, you can harvest finally on the earnings growth side, really from no longer a deterioration, but stabilization or even now increase. Yeah, so pretty good, actually.
And then looking at this from an investor perspective, and, economic data in the Eurozone has remained mixed. And obviously, there are lots of global headwinds. But Europe does have an abundance of defensive areas. Perhaps you can just start off with, if you're sort of a defensive risk averse investor, which sectors are you going to be looking at in Europe, Switzerland, the UK that might seem attractive?
So we can talk now in our Chris, but starting here, perhaps the starting point for me is always, look, when I talk to clients, I always say we're not investing in Europe, we're investing actually in European companies. I think that's already a major step to looking at Europe, because at the end, what I mean with that is really, I mean, the companies are really multinational companies, and they are there where the business is being generated. They're very opportunistic, like every company, I guess, on this planet. And really, when we look at the sectors, you know, what is going to benefit, and this is not a surprise, also the IT sector. Also, the IT sector here in Europe is completely different than, for example, in the US or in Asia, but really where we see strong growth in that area. Then also not really surprising, I mean, the energy sector also had a decent ride after we saw that, you know, oil price going up. But this is not really due to the credit of the companies, but more of the macro geopolitical issues. But where Europe is really strong is when you think about like all the industrial expertise. Yeah, we are not, let's say, the leader of the pack of whatever large language models, but we know how to deploy it. And, you know, we still have a strong industrial base. And this is where, for example, industrial companies had a very good run here as well, especially when we see where the world is heading towards more automation and robotics. And that's clearly part of tech, but really deploying tech. Let's say the physical world of tech, where I think Europe and the European companies had really a good run, and in our view will continue to have a good run.
And just to sort of drill down just a tiny bit more on the sectoral side here, I mean, obviously, like, yeah, energy companies in Europe, as in elsewhere, have had a pretty good run, and maybe not, you know, at the moment, not necessarily offering the best entry point. I mean, talk to me briefly, if you wouldn't mind, about, say, the healthcare sector, because that's certainly an area where it's been on the horizon.
Yeah, look, at the end, we always say, right, everything in life has its price, with the exception of health. That's priceless. So that's the standard here. And clearly, for example, when we look at Europe, we recently put that back in focus, the healthcare sector. Why? Because it just got too cheap to ignore, right? And everything has a price here. And we sort of like, look, it gives us the stability, also with terms of, let's say, the political risk, which is also, as we know, a highly regulated industry. We sort of like, you know what, it's actually fair. And at that level, we just recently upgraded the healthcare part here in Europe as well. And with that, clearly, when we look at the market or region with the highest healthcare exposure, we also put then Switzerland within Europe suddenly into the spotlight because of its really dominance in the European healthcare space when you look how the sector, how the index is actually composed of. And so really, that is clearly a helpful thing where Europe has, in our view, still an edge and where we could look at it.
I would also like to pick up on one of the other areas you mentioned previously, luxury, because this might seem like a counterintuitive call right now, because consumers are under pressure globally, and the Middle East is also an important market for luxury goods. So why do we still think or like luxury and lifestyle despite those headwinds?
Actually, we just pushed luxury and lifestyle because also here, right, things got a little bit too cheap in our view. And I think it's important to know where, and it's important to know, number one, it's luxury and lifestyle, so both. Mm-hmm. And the second important point is where within that segment. And there, our intention is clearly that we put, and this is what we do right now, we put a lot of focus on the really, really the high end. So it's not the average consumer, which I agree probably suffers more from what we're seeing on the oil price, etc., but really the high end, which at the end, I would say, is pretty isolated. And this is why we take the biggest stance in these stocks, which are in this kind of segment. But over time, we actively look at these kind of things, and then we flip between, you know, high-end, or we call it exclusive luxury, and perhaps more the affluent consumer. And so we have the choice. And I think that's, in general, I think it's not the time to blindly invest and, you know, invest and forget. But really, you need to, or we do that, at least for our clients, really actively manage it where we think there's the opportunity within that segment, in this case, luxury and lifestyle.
And yeah, I guess sometimes we could say that Europe as a whole has a bit of a sort of branding problem, especially on the issue of innovation, in that you think of Europe, you don't necessarily think of innovation. But perhaps that is a tad unfair. I mean, where do you see the most compelling areas of innovation?
I mean, yeah, we call them European leaders, actually. And when you think about it, I mean, there will be no semiconductors, actually, I would guess, produced in this world without the technology of some of the semi-equipment manufacturers here in Europe. Or think about, like, you know, the industrial automation. All these things, we have a lot of good companies, and nowadays they're more software and whatever digital twins they produce or provide, right? So, and all this combining, let's say, technology with the physical world, as mentioned before, this is where we make really, really a difference. And that's where we also think, like, their technology comes in, the know-how, the not only efficiency, but also, you know, the precision and all these things is like, And I know we're a little bit more expensive in some aspects, but where this quality and these kind of things come into position, and this where you know, we make the difference. And actually, here I know our listeners can't hear that, but I have here an electronic control unit with a semiconductor in it, right? We also have semiconductors. You know, these are not GPUs, but a GPU is not what you use in your industrial application. This is where we are strong and where we power the world here as well. And this is really on the infrastructure side. We see a lot happening there, is where we have really an edge here in the European market.
Could I ask about sort of AI? Because also AI and also sort of other aspects of technology, because, you know, there's been a reasonable amount in the press recently about sort of companies. We can't go into specific companies, but parts of the European market that have been doing rather well as investors look for alternatives to the US. How have you seen that phenomena?
Look, it comes back to this industrial / physical one, where I think we all know, we under whatever large language model, that's the beginning. But now let's go a step further. How do we deploy it? Where do companies then ultimately make money? How do we make ourselves in our industrial processes, etc., more efficient? And this is really then clearly what we are key and what we are here for and what we're strong. And this is also when we exchange on a continuous basis with companies, and all my team members, including myself, we meet companies on an ongoing basis. They deploy this technology, but they deploy it to get something out of it, to produce cheaper, to be more efficient, to save energy, like highlighted before. And that's where all the, you know, with the rebound we see in industrial automation, and we had a tough time over the last few years where these things come back, and this is where they're going to benefit from. And that's why I believe in. That's why, by the way, we have also an attractive view on European industrials, because we strongly, strongly believe in that.
So I guess another sector that's been under quite a lot of pressure is the autos, whether that's from Chinese or US competition or higher energy costs. And we're not broadly positive on it, but is there anything there that still looks interesting?
Well, broadly positive or not broadly positive is a strong word. Actually, we upgrade also consumer discretionary here recently in Europe, and autos is around 20% of it. But you're right, Abelina, I mean, we're staying here selective. And look, as you just said, you mentioned a couple of the challenges. They're around. There's no question about it. But it also comes back to Europe and the companies. They deal with it, right? They really deal with it. And I just, I know a lot of people in the US are listening, hopefully, to this podcast as well. On the 19th of May, so just a few days ago, literally, a company out of Germany launched the latest EV model in LA. And if you look at the specifics there in terms of performance, charging, all the things, it comes back to what I said before, right? Deploying technology in a way that is like second to none. There's no Chinese, there's no American, nobody else competitor at its scale at this stage, right? And it's an evolving target. So it means like they're open to these things, they deploy the technology. The point is just like, really, I mean, how exclusive are you? And as I said before, right, in exclusive luxury, we believe in that. But at the end, they also know the concept of software-defined vehicles. You know, they are on top when it comes to battery technology, when you're deploying the latest semiconductors and all these things. It's just a question, are you willing and able to do so? Yes, they're willing and able to do so. Would I invest my whole fortune in auto stocks? Definitely not. Am I, you know, adding a little bit right now as part of European leaders or luxury lifestyle? Yes, we do.
So a bit of a sort of different tack, just as we sort of start to wind up, which is Germany obviously has been an area within Europe where we've been more optimistic, and like part of that has been the expectation of fiscal stimulus. How has that been progressing, and like, you know, how do we see the sort of European political backdrop contributing to the outlook for companies more broadly?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Right, Germany is one of the markets we really put in focus within Europe. And there's the fiscal stimulus. You know, it's about defense spending. It's also about spending for the whole infrastructure. We call that power and resources and beyond, in a way, where there's a lot of catch-up demand. And that drives really, and you know, it lifts in a way all other boats in terms of the whole supply chain, etc. So we believe, especially after Germany is still one of the weaker markets, that, you know, when the situation in the Middle East comes down, that really we see people or investors once again taking a little bit of different spin on Europe, looking at that market and see the positives there with the industrial base, which is still strong, and automotive industry, which has really hit literally a low point. And, you know, clearly also those companies, those sectors which benefit from this increase in fiscal spending. And this is happening, right? This is a little bit extraordinary for German purposes in the past, that we really spend a little bit more because normally we try to save, but now we're spending. But that, in our view, will propel the German equity markets higher.
Okay, so we've come to our final question. If you had to leave investors with one key takeaway, what should they focus on when they look at Europe from here?
Actually, we like the European leaders. And this is a selection of really leading companies within Europe in different segments. And with that, like I said before, the selectivity, I think, is key. And here we select and think, look for those companies which are either opportunistically cheap and, you know, market overproportionately hit them perhaps, or where we see just they have such a leading position that, you know, we like the growth trajectory of that company. And so that's the way to go. European leaders.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much, Rolf. And thanks to our listeners as well. We can delve into specific securities on these podcasts, but you can explore some of these with your UBS representative. We'll be back soon with another installment of Across the Pond. And in the meantime, have a great week.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investor views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.